With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Blake Weiland.
I'm so excited to be here, and nobody else is excited that I'm here.
I am excited. Welcome, dear listener, to the Blake and Joe show. I should have introduced it as that, really. But
I know. Maybe we need our own podcast, the Blake and Joe show.
It's got a ring to it.
I think we could fix everything, like all of it. Like we could.
What you mean? It would be like a handyman podcast.
No, I just mean like all of the problems that exist. We could fix them all. Yeah.
No, that would be fine. I'd be interested in that
because there's one thing that this world needs, and it's two dudes in their 30s talking to each other on the internet. That's what we need more of. There's not very much of that content out there, so that's what we need, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of being actually in our 30s, I turned 38 on the weekend.
Oh.
Across our dear Queen's Platinum Jubilee. She had her weekend right across my birthday, which actually turned out to be quite good because I was worried that, you know, all the pubs were going to be full and I wasn't going to be able to get reservations in them and stuff, but it was actually fine. And all it meant was I got a whole extra bank holiday day off. So there you go.
I like to think that she did that for you.
Yes. I imagine. I can't see why else she would have. So that's what it was. That's what it must have been.
Agreed.
But I haven't really bought myself a birthday present. So, you know, I'm gonna try and ask for your help. I asked for Matt Oram from Fidelity Guitars help on that last week. So we'll get round to that. Although I did get a rather nice bottle of Jameson Black Barrel, which is very good.
It is very good. Yes.
For a supermarket accessible whiskey. I was like, damn, you know, I normally really like Irish whiskey and I often buy an ordinary Jameson's as a simple kind of backup.
It's whiskey. It's very consistently decent.
Exactly. That's it. It's affordable and consistent. Yes. So it's good. It's good if I just want something that's not, you know, a big taste explosion. It's good to have there. So I never bother buying the Black Barrel because it's like, oh, it's James and Jameson make, you know, cheaper whiskey. That's sort of more premium price. But I was purchased it by my lovely partner, Emma, and it is very good. I think it's all I'm going to drink from now on.
It's the Black Barrel's very good. My favorite Irish whiskey, not that I'm super well versed. I tend to go into Scotchland a little more often. But Redbreast. Now that
Redbreast, really?
Yeah, I like some Redbreast Irish whiskey. I think you'll like that. It's like, how would I describe it? It's Jameson. You know, it's got that very kind of, you know, neutralish vibe. But it's like all the things you like about Jameson, but more of it. Like more intense, you know?
I think it, you don't see it very often in here, but the Lamb, the one pub in my village, happens to sell it. So I think I've had it once in the past, but I definitely need to revisit it because there must have been a reason I never bought it again. So I may, on your recommendation, I will give it another bash, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've had it, but I remember really enjoying it when I did. So.
Well, there you go. But yes, so I do need to sort that out. I'm 38 now, Blake.
That's, you know, you're looking good. You know, thanks. Especially for a man who's put himself through what you've put yourself through. You're looking actually excellent when you view it through that lens.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we did a drinking binge from Thursday that finished on Sunday. So Monday was a very difficult day for me because I had to be back at my desk at work. It was extraordinarily difficult. I think on the Friday, I ended up with like this big tray of black Sambuca and Tuaca all mixed together. And I had to sort of select different. No, it was very difficult. Do you have Tuaca in the US? I don't think you do.
That doesn't ring a bell. I'm not familiar with that.
I actually don't think any of you, dear listener, will know what Tuaca is, unless you are from Brighton in West Sussex in England, because it is a spirit exclusive to Brighton, despite the fact that it's actually Italian. So I assume you can get it in Italy, but the only place in the UK you seem to be able to get it is in Brighton. It's very unusual. It's actually a vanilla brandy.
Oh, okay.
But
sounds nice.
Yes. But I only ever done in shots over here, so.
Okay.
I'm sure we're missing out on the true, you know, intentions of that drink.
So I need to ask you a question, since we are talking about booze currently. So I was just told, I went to Nashville to unload a bunch of machines at the Stringjoy shop. And, you know, of course, there were some of our artists in town. And so Scott and I went out to see them, you know, so on and so forth. And something I like to do once in a while is I like to find a decent gin wherever I'm at. And I get it generally, I get it neat. And I'll have a water as sort of a back to just kind of sip on in between. And Scott looked at me like I was an insane person. He told me that absolutely no one does that. And I'm like, but I like the taste of gin.
That is not bad. You are quite insane. I think I did it for a brief time. But the problem is, I don't know if you're having this in the States, but there's such a gin explosion over here.
It kind of already happened here, and it seems like things are shifting a bit to different. You know how spirits go in, or alcohol in general goes in trends. And
yes,
the gin thing kind of happened here already, and now it's kind of, I feel like it's shifting to. I don't know, because I'm kind of stuck to my, you know, I stick to my guns, so to speak. Mm. But it seems like people are paying more attention to rum right now.
Really, you're having a rum point. Wow, that's very strange. I was thinking rum
and tequila.
The weirdest one.
Tequila, actually. No, that's more.
Did tequila ever go away? Tequila,
no, it never went away. But it's really seeming like there's a lot more boutique brands, and you know, with like The Rock making his brand, and you know, like I think there's been a focus on tequila as of late.
I see. I understand. Yeah, rum's always been a weird one for me. I have some friends who drink sort of rum exclusively, but it's never a bit too sweet for me.
Agreed. Well, we have similar tastes, I think. We both like gin. We both like whiskeys and scotch. Yes, so
exactly. Grez guitars.
Grez guitars. Yeah. Old cars.
Yeah, exactly. But yes. But yes, so the gin thing that's happening over here at the moment means that gin is very, very flamboyant. So if you try and order a neat gin over here, they'll still serve it to you in a gin glass, which is, you know, those oversized wine glasses.
Yes.
They'll still pack it full of ice and garnish. They just won't put the tonic in. And at that point, all you've got is half a drink, basically.
That's not what I want either. I want just the gin. Yeah.
You want a tumbler with gin in it. Yes. Ice? You didn't have ice in it, right?
Not usually.
No, not usually. Yeah. Very well. Yes, I used to drink gin neat. My order used to be a pint of cider and a large gin.
Sounds great.
That was my early 20s. That would be my pub order, because I was obsessed with the movie With Nell and I. Have you ever seen that film?
No, but I've heard that movie title thrown around a lot. Maybe it's spoken about it before.
Potentially. Richard E. Grant's in it, and it's a film about two out-of-work actors who live in London who are alcoholics, and they go on holiday to the countryside. And that is the first bar order that Richard E. Grant puts in the film is two pints of cider and two large gins, ice in the cider.
I like the sound of that. That sounds nice. Yes.
There you go. In fact, you know, topical to my birthday, on a previous birthday in Brighton, there was there was this outside cinema, and they were showing Widnail and I. And so it's just a field with a big inflatable projector, basically.
Oh, I like that.
And
yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And because it was just outside on a field, you bring your own booze and stuff. So a bunch of us went down and did drink along with Widnail and I, which is... you can watch. There's like a, if you ever bought like the DVD, you know, gone are those days now, but the DVD of Widnail and I came with like a bonus feature, which was how to play the drinking game of Widnail and I. So it's, you know, sort of a common thing because, yeah, they obviously drink a lot throughout the movie. I mean, the first thing you've got to do is down two glasses of wine, and then the second thing you've got to do is, well, in the film, he drinks lighter fluid. Which obviously can't do, so they suggest getting like a shot of absinthe or something like that. So
lighter fluid.
Yeah, they run out of booze in the house. It starts at the end of the drinking binge, of a 36-hour drinking binge.
Okay, That I feel like lighter fluid would mess you up. I don't know that it would get you drunk.
No, absolutely. But yes, yeah, there you go. So there's I don't know how we got there, but we got there. We got on to...
You have me on the podcast. You never know where this is going to end up.
Exactly. Yes, that's true. Mm. But of course, dear listener, talking about guitar stuff, it was NAMM this weekend just gone, across my birthday. So I was, to be honest, secretly very glad that it was so muted and I didn't end up going. Like I was originally... Ashdown were originally sending me over there, and then... I think, you know, when they realized how many brands weren't going, they decided to pull out themselves, which was great for me because it meant I got to actually have my birthday over here rather than being sort of stuck on a booth in, you know, the ridiculous heat of Anaheim, California.
Yeah. I didn't go either, which, you know, it's not that big of a deal for me to go down. It's a hop, skip, and a jump, but I saw the same thing. There were so many brands that were not there. I mean, Fender, Gibson, PRS, I mean, that pretty much tells you what you need to know. Like, if none of those three are there, then there's probably a lot more that aren't there as well. I was just like, the only reason I would have went down would have been to hang out with some of the other media people, basically, because a lot of the brand, my friends that had brands were not going to be there. So I would have been hanging out with the YouTubers, and I'm going to do that in a few weeks. So... there was no reason for me to travel, you know, what would have amounted to three times in less than a month and a half. So, yeah, right. I passed.
Yeah, well, it's such a shame. And if, in fact, in the end, Dan, the CEO of Ashdown, he went over with his dad, the guy who founded the company, just because they wanted to, you know, sort of be there, have a look. I think the US distributor for Ashdown had a stand, so they were like, well, we'll just hang around that and walk around. And he contacted me on like the second day, being like, I can't believe how empty it is. Like it's you know, beyond what I imagined it to be for emptiness. So
wow,
yeah,
yeah.
He's easy to please. He's easy to please. So that's saying something.
Yeah, I heard there was something. I don't know if this is an accurate number or not, but I heard that there was something like 30% of the usual vendors there, right, and about 40% of the usual, you know, just people. So,
and it was open to the public for the whole time as well.
Was it really? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I don't have that as gospel, but Dan did say that, so I assume that's the case.
And there still wasn't very many people. I don't think that has anything personally. I don't believe that has a lot to do with the Rona at this point. I think that was simply people like, oh, I heard there's not much there this year, I'm not going. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So...
I mean, I think it still had the potential because I know Fender weren't going, Gibson weren't going. I know those are big brands not to be there. But honestly, as a punter, were you fussed about Fender and Gibson going? You can see that stuff in literally every single shop on the planet. Like, well, why does it matter? You're just seeing stuff you can see anyway.
It's a signifier of who else is not going to be there in my mind. Yes. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. But, you know, hey, we've been to NAMM several times. Like, it's about wandering around, all the random weird stuff, seeing an effects pedal that's also a hairdryer or a guitar with seven necks that spins round. You know,
and that's the problem. That's the problem. The only pedal company, I know there's more, but the only pedal company that I, you know, have a little bit of contact with that I knew was going was Walrus.
Really?
Literally, like Chase Bliss wasn't going. Jay Chess said they weren't going in 2020 after that NAMM. Before anything actually happened, he told his crew, like, we're never coming back here.
Trendsetters. In fact, that's probably why Fender didn't go, and Gibson.
I mean, even
JHS.
Even EQD just had a small pedal board at the Stompbox Deli booth, you know, or at least that's what I was told. So, yeah, there just wasn't, I don't think there was a lot to see, unfortunately. I think Ryan Burke didn't even really make any videos, if I remember his video title correctly. So that says something, because that guy usually cranks out a ton of content at NAMM.
Yes, he's a machine at NAMM.
He is a beast. Yes,
there were also simultaneously not very many releases, not very many companies that needed to release, as NAMM wasn't going to be such a big thing. And the thing is, dear listener, when guitar companies release at NAMM, honestly, they're all forced to, because NAMM's so important, which is why you tend to get January NAMM comes around, everyone goes, here's our stuff. It doesn't hit shelves till October, because those things have, they've only just, you know, they're still designing those things and they're so behind. You know, it was certainly always the case with like Ibanez, you know, would always have this big announcement in January. And when we were back at GAC, we might see them October, November that year. Gibson, you'd probably see them next year, you know.
Yeah. And that was during supply chain difficulty times. So imagine what it would be like now.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering, and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions, and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions, and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
Exactly. But not that many companies have released things. However, there have been a few that have put things out, and they have been very good, because I think the people that are releasing things now are holding, you know, are putting out excellent stuff. You know, it's not just things that are being sort of thrown out to have something released at NAMM. It's things that are ready to go and they're really good. So we're gonna talk about some of those things. We're gonna move on to those. I finally got my Boss BCB 1000, my birthday present from Matt Knight.
Whoa.
And it is very good. Have you got to try out a BCB 1000?
I have not.
Do you know which one it is? Or is it 1000X, I think it's called?
So no. I mean, I've seen it, of course. But, yeah. No, it's not the X, is it?
It's the 1000X, which is it's the pedal board that's also a suitcase. So it has a telescopic handle and wheels, even though it's a smaller size. Oh, it's very good.
It looks fantastic.
It does really high quality, really good, considering how, you know, sort of functional and basic the other BCBs are. This one's actually super duper pro.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I spoke about it a bit last week, but I'm so chuffed with it now that I've got it. It breaks open so that the front half of the case comes away with the slatted pedal board built into it, but it has like some coin screws on there, so you can untighten those and lift out the board should you want to. I think I'll just leave the coin screws out and keep it on the half side, but the coin screws are a bad idea because it means you can't access, you know, like you can't access the power supply or any cabling should you have an issue mid-set unless you've got a coin to unlock those screws. So that's, yeah.
Or a guitar pick, maybe?
Yeah, but potentially. They're quite heavy duty.
This thing does look beastie. Is it like, is this designed as like a flight case? It looks really robust.
Yeah, it's really robust. Like, the outside is obviously that formed plastic that they've used on their other BCB boards. The board itself is metal. There's none of that silly foam stuff that Boss used on their other pedal boards, and it has a through box like cut into the metal chassis
the board. I saw that.
It's really good. So I started rebuilding my board today on it. I'm sticking with the MS3. I can't get rid of it, dear listener. I can't change out, you know. I've had Helixes, a GT1000 core, the HX effects, the HX stomp, you know. I had those things, and yeah, none of them have quite been enough for me. I just think the MS3 sounds really good. It's kind of an unsung hero. I think it got eclipsed by everything that came after, and no one sort of stopped to think, oh, the sounds on this are actually well better than everything else. But yeah, it doesn't matter. But so the MS3 will stay.
The MS3 was, you know, back in the day when I was actually considering having a pedal board, before I decided that that's just silly. I could just throw all my pedals on a table. The MS3 was a strong contender because of, I mean, I was looking at ES switchers and everything, but then I saw what the MS3 had to offer, and I was just like, you know, that makes a lot of sense, but I couldn't quite bring myself to spring for it. You know, I have all these other pedals though. But it still appeals to me in some weird way for some reason.
It does some things better than others. So, you know, like, obviously, I deal with my compression outside of the MS3. The drives are actually really good. I've said this before on the podcast. I spent a long time using the built-in drives on the MS3. But, you know, nonetheless, you obviously get better ones. But the vibrato on there, to my ear, it sounds exactly the same as the VB2W. So I use the inbuilt vibrato on there. The ring mod on there is an excellent approximation of the Moog ring moddy things.
MF, very, very whatever, good. I forget the number. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's great. So those, I'm just using built-in effects. Phasers, terrible. But then, you know, the Boss phaser isn't really very good anyway, so that stands to reason. But, you know, there's
I guess that's your opinion, but okay. Well, all right.
But it's some really useful features on it. Even the octaves track, you know, well enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good. So I'm rebuilding. So I've got the MS3. I am going with the Thorpe FX Fat General compressor.
Okay, makes sense.
Extremely good. Just having the blend control, being able to get that squashy vintage tone, but being able to use that blend control to let enough of your clean signal through to still give your tone dynamics. That's a real win-win for me. That's exactly what I want in a pedal. And because it's Thorpe FX, it's designed with Dan Coggins as well, it just oozes extreme quality and wonderful playingness.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And plus, you know, I like Adrian a lot. You know, yeah. I just do. He's a
great fella. Well, I only got that Fat General because I saw him at Birmingham and he was like, Joe, I haven't sent you anything in ages. I'm going to send you something next week. Give me your address. that was it. I was like, oh, thank you. I didn't ask for this, but it is actually exactly what I want. It's amazing and brilliant. So I'm very happy with that. So that's sorted. MS3 sorted. Compressor sorted. I need space for that little FS7, the little cradle Boss foot switch, so mm-hmm. I can pan mm-hmm. up and down through the MS3. So space allocated for that. Could use the built-in tuner on the MS3, but it's a little slow, and often because I do the talking for Polymath, I have extraordinarily limited time to tune up.
Right.
So I'm going for something a bit quicker. The TC Electronics Polytune 2. Well, I think it's got a good bright screen and it tunes very well. That's all it needs. I don't care about tuners, it's fine. The Boss one's too big. It doesn't need to be that big.
I like the Korg Pitch Blacks. I've always been a fan of those.
They're very good.
I think they're underrated as a tuner, in my opinion. Plus, they look cool.
They do, and they're super affordable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the Pitch Blacks quite a bit.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for them. They're good. Okay, so that's sort of functional stuff. And then we have end of the chain. I've got to have a preamp there. I'm still using the Sansamp VT bass. It's very good, like just great EQ. The blend is fantastic. It means I can take some little nothingy Class D 500 watt head and leave the EQ flat, and you know that packs away into the van with everything else, and I can just do everything off of the board. So that suits me fine. You know, I'm not going to think for a second. Class D is obviously an absolute sack of crap, and solid state is a million times better for bass, but. And so, you know, size is a premium, and it doesn't matter in the sort of venues I'm playing. So I'm happy using the preamp into the Class D head. That's leaving me a fair chunk of room. So I'm going drive. I have been using. So after we last spoke, Blake, I purchased the Fuzzrocious Little Fella.
Oh, you did? Oh,
I
right.
did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I got hold of one of those. Actually, Fuzzrocious reached out and offered to take away some of my American fun bucks. So I think I was looking for something from a US company because I had a bunch of, I think it was, yeah, like, I can't remember. Some
like
company
gift cards or something?
Some company had paid me through PayPal for something and in American. And I was like, well, I can either move this money into pounds or I can pretend it doesn't exist and spend it all on American stuff.
So well, we appreciate it here in the States. Thank you. And Ryan is a good dude, and I really like his stuff. So how did you I hope I didn't overhype the little fella for you too much.
No, it's very, very good. Actually, I didn't choose the little fella. I let Ryan choose. I just said, you know, he listened to the podcast. He knew what we were looking at. And I said, you know, I don't know. What would you recommend? This is the sort of thing I like trebly but still fat bass drives. I like bass drives that sound like a loud bass amp. They don't sound like an artificial distortion on top of a tone.
Mm-hmm.
I think like harmonic percolator soundy. That's the sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I honestly thought he was going to recommend the Cat King.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be the thing. Because, of course, a couple of weeks later, I've developed an obsession with Proko Rats. So I wish he had, but he didn't. He recommended the little fella. And I got that. And I can't believe how versatile it is, Blake.
Isn't it wild? Like, it's like, wow, this really... I think it's becoming a little bit more of a thing that people are designing drive pedals that work well and everything. I've talked about it a little bit before. I have a pedal from a company that it's a dirt box, and it was designed with baritone in mind. And right. Honestly, it doesn't work with anything else. Baritone and bass sounds great with. It sounds like absolute trash with standard tune instruments, in my opinion.
I see.
I understand that it was designed to focus on those frequencies, so I'm not trashing it too much. I'm just saying it. I was like, well, let's try it with standard tune. Oh, let's never try it with standard tuning again. And so with Ryan's stuff, he is a bass player oftentimes, and so he knows his primary audience is guitar players, so he tries to make it work well with everything, and really nailed it with the little fella.
Yeah. Well, the thing with the little fella, for me, I was like, I'm a big fan of the fact that it's got like dual gain stages in there. That makes it so much easier to shape a drive that's right for you. It's almost an undersung thing in drive pedals, but as soon as you've only got one gain stage, that's the way that pedal sounds. You're either having less or more of it. But mm-hmm. being able to sort of balance those up it's so wonderful. It means it's capable of so many things, which actually, because it's a single... just a normal one foot switch pedal, that makes it tricky for me, because I'm like, there are all these tones that I want from it. I need four of these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But and the fact that it's got that gate, it's got a gate, dear listener, on a little switch, and you switch that gate over and it turns it into a fuzz. But it's not like one of these pedals that's like, oh, so there's a fuzz, but the fuzz sounds garbage. It's actually an amazing sounding fuzz. And because what works out quite well for me is because the drive I have it set up to is relatively low gain, relatively transparent-ish sounding, when I slap it over to the gate side, which of course you have to do with your hand because it's a switch, it becomes a super spluttery gated fuzz. Like the notes will peter out almost immediately, sort of,
mm-hmm.
Which is a very desirable fuzz tone for me. So it is extremely good.
Yeah. And it's got a little fella on it. I mean, it's got a cute little fella on there.
It does. Yes. Yeah, so I got the standard printed one. Just because I was, they could do that quicker and send it out to me quicker, and I was eager, so I got that. So mine's light blue with the spider on it.
Ooh, very nice. Mine is white with the spider on it. It's one of the, I think actually, I don't remember now. Yeah, I did one of the release videos. So mine, I did a baritone demo because he already did the bass demo and he had some standard tune stuff already. I was like, I will do the baritone demo then. So yeah, more Fuzzrocious love on the Guitar Nerds podcast. Mm, I love Ryan. I need to call him. I should call him.
Oh. Do you want to go now?
Yeah, I gotta go. I gotta give him a call.
But it is extraordinarily good. But to be honest, it went straight onto my board. Immediately became the drive pedal on my board, and I played my last like 3-4 shows with the Fuzzrocious on my board, but. What I've found is I think because my main drive tone is relatively transparent and then I need like a big, thicker other thing, I'm using other pedals for the big thing. And I kind of feel like Fuzzrocious, that the little fella does even though it does everything, I think the little fella excels at doing the massive sounding drive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's its wheelhouse, whilst it is very versatile. The transparent thing for me, it sounds fantastic, but I found it difficult to like maybe, I guess, get in enough low end mm-hmm. when you're really trying to wind down the gain. It still sounded great. I just thought it sounded better, like bigger. So I've decided to make that now my secondary drive, my big bit drive, and to get another drive pedal on to do the more transparent thing. And I've gone for the KMA Logan transcend drive, which is exactly what you were just saying, Blake, about people making drive pedals that can do everything.
Mm-hmm. Or at least handle, you know, they maybe don't do every sound, yes, but they can handle every instrument. Yeah,
that's what I meant. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's, and that was the idea behind the Logan, is the Logan's supposed to be a drive pedal that sounds great on guitar, bass, synthesizers. Yeah, I think there's even like a demo of it where they like use it on a drum bus.
Cool. You know,
it's that sort of thing. It's like, this does an awful lot. And it's got a second foot switch on there where you can control mids, which is kind of, for guitarists, really good. You can do that cocked wah thing. Like, I let Tim, the guitarist in Polymath, try it, and he was like, oh, yeah, this is a great cocked wah drive. So he wants it for that. For me, having that as like a little mids boost, that's an excellent way of getting just a touch more out of the drive pedal every now and again when you want the bass to just cut through a little bit more. But, you know, in its normal setting, sounds fine. Like, the little fella doesn't have a blend control for bass, but because it has a standard two-band EQ, unlike sort of the just general tone control like you have on the little fella, because you've got that separate bass control, you can kind of dime that and really get some big, thick, subby sound coming from it. But
yes,
I don't think I've ever been happier with my drive tone.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad, and I really think, nerds, you need to check out musicnomadcare.com. We've spoken about all their wonderful guitar maintenance products on the podcast, and I really can't emphasize how important it is to look after your gear and how easy Music Nomad make that for you with things like their how-to advice center and their setup hub. Music Nomad have been around for a little over 10 years, and in that time they've become one of the most recognized brands for guitar tech gear. They're available worldwide in every guitar store you can think to name, and it's for a good reason. All their products are professional grade quality. Every tool, and even the cases the tools come in, are designed for proper, rugged, on the road use. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is around Music Nomad, as they are redefining and raising the bar for equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
Well, that is quite a statement, because you have played a lot. You swap things out so often and actually use them out in the real world. I swap things out all the time and just use them alone by myself like a nerd. and so I don't ever play with the same rig twice, like,
really?
ever.
Wow. No,
like, well, it's the fun for me. It's like, they're like Legos. I can swap everything in and out. What's that sound like? What about when I run this reverb into this flanger? Like, what happens? You know, that's what I like to do. But, you know, if you're stoked on your drive tone and like how you're able to implement that into your set, I mean, you've had a lot of experience with these things at this point, so that says a lot.
Well, there you go. Well, okay. So, as someone who you know, you experiment with pedals a lot at the moment, there's a gap on my pedal board, on this new pedal board. So I've got the Logan and the Fuzzrocious little fella. We've got the preamp, we've got the MS3 and its little bits, and we've got the compressor. I need a phaser in the gap. That's what I need. Ideally, a phaser.
I have a phaser for you. You ready for this?
Talk to me about phaser.
Let me tell you about this phaser. This phaser is affordable. This phaser was released sometime in the early 2000s. This phaser is gray, and this phaser sounds fantastic. Can you guess what it is?
No.
The Ibanez PH7 phaser.
Oh.
Yes. Yes,
This is the one with the retracting knobs.
It is, yes. They depress in to avoid kickage. Now, the one negative thing about the 7 Series, I love the 7 Series pedals. There are some seriously hidden gems in there. I love a lot of them, PH7 being one of the primary ones. The problem with them is their switches suck. While most of mine work fine, you will occasionally find one that you're like, oh, this sounds great, but the switch is a little finicky, or it's totally toast. So there's that to consider. But the sound for the money with these things is ridiculous.
I'm looking at one for £50 right now on eBay.
That's what I'm telling you. The PH7 sounds so good. It sounds so good.
Talk to me about how it sounds. Can I do that slow MXR Phase 90 thing, but with like loads of depth? That's what I want. I just want loads of depth.
That's why I like it so much. Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep. You can get it. It'll just go all the way down into the Sarlacc pit if you want it to. Yeah. It's so good. And that's how I like my phasers too. I like them to go really deep and really slow. So yeah, that would be my suggestion for you.
These pedals look so bad that I'd never consider them.
They're so good. They're so good. The DE7 is one of the best delays. It sounds so good. The DE7 is fantastic. I have a pink DE7, actually, that I got from Josh Scott.
I'm looking at a pink DE7 right now on Reverb.
They're probably a little more expensive, or actually a lot more expensive than your standard.
£299. 300 squidaroonies.
Yeah, that was... They did a pink DE7, and they did a green... TS7, the Tube Screamer. I believe those were both exclusive to Japan, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, but the DE7, the gray box, they're the same internally. Sounds so good, man. The echo mode on it is so underrated. It's incredible. And I think you can probably pick a DE7 up for somewhere around like $70. Last I looked, yeah.
Wow.
The 7 series has got some... The Smashbox is a fantastic... Like, if you're looking to do the chugs, you know, you're looking to get brutal, the Smashbox will do that for you.
The Smashbox? What is the Smashbox?
Yeah, it's a high-gain distortion. It's gnarly. It works great for drop tuning.
Wow.
Yeah. The analog phaser is really good, too. I think I somewhat prefer the PH7, so they have two different phasers in the lineup.
Oh, two different phasers. That's an odd thing. You expect them to have a handful of drives. I don't expect a company to go for two separate phasers.
Yeah, two different phasers. The PH7 is a digital one. I think it's AP7 is their analog phaser. Both really good. But the PH7,
you'd recommend the digital one.
Yeah, for especially for what you like and what I like out of a phaser. I think that it does that a little bit better. The analog one feels a little chewier, as you would expect, but it doesn't have that like deep rumble to it when it goes down low. At least not as extreme as the PH7 does.
I see. Okay. Well, let's see. Ibanez PH7. I'm just going to check on Reverb. £60 on Reverb. £50 on eBay. Add to basket. There we go.
There you go.
It is done.
You did it. You just went and did it.
I've done it on your recommendation.
Wow.
The PH7. It's going to be the ugliest pedal. I'm reluctant to commit this to a board because it's so ugly. But
I wouldn't say they're
you've
ugly.
You talked me into it, and it's cheap enough for me to do it on the spot.
They are, I don't think they're ugly, they're just very plain. They actually have sort of a brutalist look, you know? It's just very, like, not a lot of character going on. Just very gray and straight and hard.
That's fine.
Yeah.
and the switch thing isn't an issue for me because it's going to be running through the Boss MS3. All the switching will be done there. So as long as it can be on, that's fine.
That's actually why that was a big part of the reason I recommend this. This is like the stars were aligning because I saw this on the list. Need a phaser. And I did not plan this out at all. The PH7 just happened to be sitting right next to my mouse. And I was like, this is perfect because I know he's going to run it through the MS3. So the phaser or the switch won't be an issue. So this is kind of the perfect thing for you. And I think you're really going to like it. I really
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. There you go. That's my birthday present to myself.
Happy birthday.
Thanks very much, Blake. Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool. I will look forward to that. I tell you what, also this week, I've been playing a lot of Fender Bassbreaker, the 1830 Fender Bassbreaker.
Uh-huh.
Do you spend much time with the Fender Bassbreaker series? Did we speak about this before? I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
So I used to have the Bassbreaker, what was that, the 7?
007?
Yeah, the 007 head. I really liked it a lot. I really, really did. This is going to sound kind of weird coming from me. That is one of the things, one of the very, very few pieces of gear that I actually sold. Let me back up the story a little bit. I bought it originally because the band that I was practicing with, there was a couple smokers in that band. And in the practice space we were practicing in, it was okay for them to smoke while practicing.
That is rock and roll.
Yeah, we were totally rock and roll. I didn't really mind. That didn't really bother me. But my Bensons were coming home smelling like the 1970s. And I didn't like that very well because I would have to literally leave them on the porch and let them air out for 2 days after every practice. And I was like, that's not really what I want. Also, that speaks to how good this is for me in my lungs. But anyway, I played the Bassbreaker 7 at Guitar Center. And I was like, this doesn't sound like my Benson at all, but it sounds really cool and sounds like what I would expect it to sound like. And it was relatively affordable. And so I was like, well, it's cheap enough. I can take this to practice. And if it smells like cigarettes, that's not going to bother me that much. I still would like it. It still had kind of a cloth, you know, exterior.
Yes, but it does. But it's got that gray, that charcoal Tolex, clothy Tolex.
But since it was harder, my Benson ones I had were literally covered in my grandpa's couch material that he left me.
Right.
That just absorbed it, you know. This didn't really absorb it so much, at all. Like, I didn't have that same problem when I would take this there. It didn't smell when I would bring it home, so it wasn't really an issue anyway. We didn't play in that space very long. I only played probably 3 or 4 sessions with that thing.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. And then it was just kind of chilling in the shred shed. And I would plug it in once in a while. I basically would think about selling it. I'd plug it in and go, man, this thing sounds so good. Why would I sell it? And then it would sit for 6 months. And then I finally was like, you know, you have all these other things. This needs to go to somebody who's going to actually play it. And so I moved it on to somebody who actually needed it. I think they're really cool amps. And if it had a little more power, if I'd had the bigger version that you're talking about, I probably would have held on to it.
Yeah, I because these came out whilst I was working at GAG. And Matt really didn't like them. And I don't think Jay really liked them. And I think I just sort of took their word for it. But, when I was buying this, I bought this Bassbreaker 1830 for my guitarist Tim for his 40th birthday. And I was looking for a Vox alternative because he has real cold feet about Vox. He used to play AC30s all the time. They used to break. He got through like 3 of them. Mm-hmm. So he didn't want one of those. I knew if I bought him an AC30, he'd just be like, oh, I don't want this. It's going to break, you know. So, but he recorded on a Vox. It's long story. Anyway, he's really back into his Vox sound. I was like, what can I get him that's not a Vox, that sounds like a Vox? Fender with British valves, you know, sounding a bit more Voxy. I thought this would be great. Obviously, we don't get the tremolo. You don't get the reverb. It's very, very simple. Just an 18 or a 13 or a 30 watt switch, and you either got a master tone and a volume on the 18, or you've got 3 bands of EQ and a volume on the 30, so you've got no gain. You know, it's just a brutally loud, very clean amp with 2 slightly different voicings. Mm-hmm. Really,
yeah,
it sounds so good.
It does sound good. I don't understand why they didn't like them. Maybe because it doesn't really sound like a Fender, and
I think
the Fender
that's
name
it
on it.
Yeah, I think that's it. Because it's not quite a Vox, because it doesn't have the additional things. It just has the right valve set. And, you know, that certainly with the 1830, I guess that's quite unusual, the way they've set it up. It's, you know, that's very minimal controls for a big 212. But my goodness, it's loud. My goodness, it's clear. And it has such character to its tone as well. I think they also look great. I love that boxy Fender logo. I love the charcoal Tolex, the black grill cloth. It's got some real style. But for whatever reason, super duper unpopular for Fender, even though they still make them, they go for nothing these days. I mean, I bought that for £220.
You know, really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's. I think I bought my 7, and I thought I got a smoking deal. I think I paid like $180 for it, maybe.
Right.
Something like that. Maybe it was a little bit less than that. That sounds right.
That's a great price.
But I think they're cool amps. And like I said, if I had the one that you have, I may have held on to it. That's part of the reason I got rid of the 7 and didn't play it that much, was because it was like, this just doesn't quite have enough power for me.
Yeah.
doesn't it take it actually did pretty well for being so low wattage as far as like taking pedals and having enough headroom and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it just, you know, it was just chilling. And I do think they're kind of underrated. I would put them in the same category, not sonically, but as far as quality for dollar as like the Vox Night Train that we talked about last time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that I will say that the high end on the bass breaker is brutal. Like brutal. I was playing I took my Harmony Silhouette, mm-hmm. which I love. I love that guitar. It's all I seem to be playing at the moment. But yeah, so I took the Harmony Silhouette, mini humbuckers, mini gold foil humbuckers in the Silhouette. I normally always play on the bridge. I couldn't. It hurt. I had to play on the neck just to tame some of that aggressive high end. And even honestly, like move your hand down the fretboard and get that scrape at your peril, because that sound will go through you on the it's the most insane amount of treble on any amplifier I've ever heard.
I don't remember the 7 being that crazy, but it could have been the cabinet I was running it through. Maybe it toned it down a little bit, because I did just have the head, so I was playing it through a pretty good sized Sun. Now, yeah, that had to have been it. It was a Sun 212, an old Sun 212, and that thing has a ton of bass, so it probably was, you know, making up for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that this thing doesn't have great low end. It's just that it's incredibly articulate. I was just plugging the guitar in straight into the amplifier, but I was like, damn, I definitely, if I was using this, I'd want, you know, something taming this,
right?
You know, some sort of preamp, something hitting it. But of course, you know, I think it would be ideal for Tim, because he's always plays driven. And so that amp's only ever going to be hit by a drive pedal first. So, you know, it just needed to be a clean platform. So I hope all of that high end will get tamed. But for being articulate, just for being great, yes, it weighs a ton. But, and I know, dear listener, I went through this big period of being like, everything should be lightweight because my band van's overweight and I'm obsessed with that now. But now I don't care anymore. I was... I know. I was up at Ashdown the other week with Mark Gooday, who the owner and founder of Ashdown. He also founded Trace Elliott before in the 80s. He hates Class D. He hates lightweight stuff. And he was even saying to me, he was like, I don't understand why people think that it's actually a trade off. There's no, you're not getting it for free. You're not getting the lightweight for free. It is at the expense of tone. Because you literally need metal, you need a big heavy transformer to create the sounds that you have been listening to, and that was his point. And I was like, yeah, I don't care about these things. So
that makes me wonder about those new Black Stars. You know,
oh, the St. James's, they are supposed to be super lightweight, aren't they?
Yeah, but they don't have a big output transformer. So no. That makes me curious, because it's tube. Without a giant transformer, I don't remember how they were getting around that.
I'm not sure either. I don't want to write it off until I've heard it, because, you know, there's always room for innovation. I'm just not so sure necessarily that Class D was it. You know, that really was a sacrifice. Whereas this could be something really good. We'll certainly give it a listen. To be honest, like, people I respect have played them and been like, these sound good. And Blackstar have never really made anything for me, never anything that's that I've got excited about. But, you know, this, I think that could be good. I'm looking forward to it.
This is exciting for me. I've, to be fair, like, never paid super close attention to Blackstar, but this is probably the release that they've came out with that has excited me the most.
Yeah.
I'm like, they I'm very good. Curious to try it.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I need to give them a call. Yeah, they look really good, don't they? They've got some good players on board who are, you know, ascertaining that they are very good amps. And from the demos that I've listened to, you know, what can you tell about an amp through speakers in a video? No, very little, but it sounds really good, you know. So
yeah. Who knows? Who knows? I'm being open minded. I wanna try it.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. Well, I tell you what, I've just randomly remembered. I went to friend of the podcast, Dan Grace's wedding over the weekend with Jay and Mark. And Dan Grace, he works for Squire. He used to work with us at GAC. Mm-hmm. He went on to work for Squire. And he's the reason that in the UK, there are loads of Shell Pink Squires. He gets all the FSR things. I think he was quite involved. He deals with the US as well. He was quite involved in that Shell Pink Base 6 as well, that came out of Squire. But he does, and he spent honestly half of his wedding talking to me about these new. Oh, I probably can't actually talk about them. Yeah, I better not, because Fender and Squire are a big enough company that they'll mind. and if Fender and Squire are listening, Dan didn't tell me anything. No embargoes were broken here.
Nothing. No. You don't know anything about anything.
I don't know. Who's Dan? I don't know him. but he plays this. He has a lovely custom shop. 52 telly in blonde. Ooh. Very good, very good. Jay's super jealous. And he plays it through a Marshall 1974X and splits it into a... what does he use now? Does he use a Bassman? I think he has a Bassman 50 and has a little ABY to switch between them. Also has a Klon Centaur as his only pedal, which is rather cool. It's a very cool setup, but he plays a 72 Deluxe now as well that he also has, a Fender 72 Deluxe, which he's just had refinished in Shell Pink, which at first I thought was a bit of a cardinal sin, but it does actually look great and suited him very much.
I think it's fine. It's not a sin. It's fine. It's okay. That's what I say. It's all fine. Paint everything whatever color you want it to be.
Well, he was wearing a blue suit, but with Shell Pink tie and Shell Pink Doc Martens.
That works.
Doc Martens, so yeah. So it worked. Yeah. He played guitar in the wedding band, which is why we knew that. What do they call it? Bandioki? I don't know. But it was basically like, if you knew some standards, you needed to let people know at the start because you might have to go up and play something. Which was difficult because, of course, you want a drink. But yeah. Jay Cross got picked out the hat very near to the end and had to sing a cover of The Hives' Hate to Say I Told You So.
How'd that go?
That was very good. Jay Cross is an excellent front man. He kicks his legs very high, but it was good.
I could see him being a very high kicker. That makes a lot of sense. That pencils.
Exactly. It was.
He could probably kick my head like off.
Oh, almost undoubtedly. Yeah, he's a very aggressive man. He's a very aggressive man.
He's so scary. So scary.
He is. So there is another issue that you can help me with, Blake.
Okay.
I keep thinking about getting another Gibson Melody Maker.
Oh.
I really want one in my life. I feel like I got rid of the one that I had. Admittedly, I just had it as part of my shop. I didn't own it, but when it sold, I was like, I really loved that guitar very, very much. And I feel like right now a vintage guitar is missing from my life because I have lots of vintage basses. I don't have any vintage guitars. Everything I have is new. You know, pretty much what I'm using now is the Harmony, the two Harmonies. I've got the Juno, the Silhouette, and the Grez Mendocino. Those are the three go-tos now over here. And I am missing having something old and a bit crappy, you know. And the Melody Maker just seems like I get all the emotional support of having Gibson on the headstock and so feeling like a big boy, but it's also relatively affordable and it has all that sort of Italian 70s, you know, sort of not made very well vibe to it. All that sort of you're really fighting the guitar to get the notes out thing. And it's super short scale, which I think is very cool. So I think I want one again. What do you think?
So I love, with a deep passion, I have a 65 Melody Maker. And I love that guitar. I would push back a bit on the, you know, because I've played a lot of those weird Italian guitars and those weird Japanese guitars, which like some can be just rippers and some it's like, how do you even play this guitar? It doesn't make any sense. This Melody Maker used to fall under that category of like, this doesn't play very well. But I took it over to my friend Matt Wright, Wright Sounds, who's a tech here in Portland. And he just did kind of a basic setup, maybe a little tweaking here and there. And we added a Mojo Axe bridge to it, which is and like a pre-intonated wraparound style replacement.
Yes, know them well.
And this thing's an absolute ripper now. Because I was actually thinking about selling it, because I got it and I was like, it doesn't quite, you know, it doesn't spark the joy that I thought it was going to over a long period of time. And so I said, you know what? I can tell that this needs a setup. I can tell it needs a little bit of fretwork. I can tell it needs some stuff. Let's go get that done and then decide if you're going to sell it. And I took it to him and I said, yeah, set this up for me. Do all the things that it needs. And then I'll decide if I'm going to sell it or not. He did all that stuff. I came back over. I plugged it in. Played it for like 30 seconds, and he's like, "You're not selling that anymore, are you?" I was like, "Nope, not at all, not even kind of." He's like, "Yeah, I wouldn't sell that guitar." He's like, "That thing's a beast." Now, specifically, what I think is overlooked, and this does make my recommendation is going to make this a little bit harder on you, but for the longest time, if you go into gear forums, a lot of people are like, "You got to get rid of those pickups. You got to get rid of those." They're like lap steel pickups is what they put in them. They were just like leftover pickups that Gibson had laying around. And they were like, you got to get rid of those and get a P90, you know, style pickup in there, which is great. But these pickups are totally underrated, especially if you can get one of the double pickup versions. That pickup.
Really?
Yeah, that pickup in the neck position. Whoo.
I bet so as much good. As I'm a big bridge pickup fan, I bet this is exactly the sort of instrument and exactly the sort of pickup that will sound fantastic in a neck position.
Mm-hmm. It sounds great in the bridge too. It's slightly Telly-esque.
Imagine it's more a character sound in the bridge.
Yeah, it's to me it sounds like a Telecaster with slightly less bottom end, you know. But in the neck, man, it's just magical. So I would recommend, if you can, find the double pickup version, which is, I know, a harder thing to do.
Very much so.
But it's incredible. It's such an underrated guitar. If I didn't have one, you know, I would even be tempted to have, like, maybe someone like Fidelity build something similar, you know?
Yes, it's got that vibe, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. So, what do you think?
What do you think about those early 2000s reissues? You know, could I slake my thirst for this instrument with one of those?
I don't think so. I think those are great, and I would play one, and I have played them before, and I think they're pretty cool. In general, I think the Gibsons from the early 2000s are pretty great in just whatever whichever one you would decide to go with. I have a faded Les Paul myself, but I don't think it's going to scratch that vintage itch that you're looking for. Yeah, like
I
at all.
You're right.
Like, I think you'll get it and be like, this is cool, but I still want something old.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right. And they're shooting up in value now.
Are they? I haven't looked in a while.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at a 63 double cut, double pickup, £2,700.
Whoa. What?
Yeah, I'm looking at a 59. Admittedly, it's the 59, the three-quarter Melody Maker 2900.
What happened?
I found another one here, 62, 2300. A completely gutted body. So just the body, like finish removed, no plate. You know, the body and neck, obviously, and headstock. No tuners or anything. So it's just the wood, really. 1200. Same thing. That was a double cut. Same thing. Single cut. 1960, 1900. So
whoa.
That's not even the guitar. So
that makes me wonder what's going on in that's the UK reverb, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So a couple of those I think would have been EU. Those last ones. Yeah. Those gutted ones were Germany. There's a place in Germany that seems to have a lot of that sort of stuff. Like, here's some vintage thing that's just had everything stripped out of it, and we're still charging a bunch for it.
Let's see what we have going on in the States right now. I'm pulling it up. Okay, we're looking at. That's a single pickup. you know, maybe what we have to do is a little geo arbitrage here. So maybe I find you one. And then we, and then we, you know. Well, here's, no, that's a single. But there are some single pickups out there for, wow, these have really shot up a lot. Now, granted, mine has been refinished at some point, which probably cuts it in half. But yeah, there's a 64 double pickup on here. It looks really clean for what it's worth. Oh, and it has a case, which is helpful for, yeah, $3,500. What in the world?
Wow.
Yeah. Another one that's, for $29. But there are some single pickups for around $15.
Well, that, yeah, that is what the best deal I've found is on Reverb for one of the... the double cuts, single pickup, double cut in that lovely sort of natural mahogany finish, which I assume that they came in that, right? That's not that the finish has been stripped.
Well, see, that's what I've never been able to figure out about mine. I'm pretty sure it's been refinished, but mine looks more like a walnut.
Yeah,
like it's really weird. I've never been able to quite figure it out.
Well, either way, I would love a sunburst, but I was certainly considering the price difference, except this natural mahogany. Double cut, I was always more into the single, but the double is really stunning. I'm really starting to like the double, actually, the more time I spend looking at this. 1,400.
Okay.
£1,400. So that's way more reasonable. That's definitely like I'd feel less bad because I guess I sold the single cut that I had for a grand. So this isn't too much more considering it's been like 4 years since I sold
I like both the singles. Normally I'm a single cut guy for especially for Gibsons.
Yeah.
Like I definitely prefer a Les Paul to an SG, even though I love SGs. But something about the weirdness of the double cut Melody Maker really appeals to me. I don't know what it is.
Isn't it? I don't know. The horns just seem like an odd choice considering the contours of the lower bout of the body. It seems sort of weirdly, but it looks strangely balanced. It looks neck heavy. You know, I don't know how to describe that, dear listener, but they're unusual and very weird looking.
The other thing about Melody Makers that is underrated is that thinness of the body. They're very comfortable for me. I find them very comfortable. Now, if you're a bigger person, I could see how they might not be. But if you're, you know, vertically challenged like myself, they're quite a comfortable guitar and they're super light. You can really thrash around with these things and you're going to be fine. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to play this guitar later. Cause I've just been staring at it the whole time that we've been talking about it. It's like, I'm so glad I didn't sell that the way I had originally planned.
Yeah.
I don't want to make anyone feel bad, but I paid like $900 for it. Yeah, so,
like. Oh, I missed the times before, you know, well, not before the internet, but I guess before like YouTube and podcasts and information became so readily available. And so now everyone knows about everything. So everything's the right price. You know, it's so much harder to find a super deal these days.
Yeah, and that's what's weird is this was definitely still when I bought this was definitely prime internet age, but there for a while this shop in town I remember asking the guy, I'm like, you sure this is what you're selling this for? Like, I'm not like, I'll take it. Not this guitar in particular. It was actually I believe it was a 68 Antigua what's the guitar? The Fender semi hollow. My brain just totally
fit. Starcaster, the Coronado?
The Coronado. Now I know Antigua is very polarizing. I happen to like it. Some people don't, and I get that. However, yeah, there's no denying this guitar's value. This was only probably 7 years ago, and it was $800.
What?
Yeah. I did not have $800 at all that I could dedicate to it without selling something, and but I was like, oh, and I was like, are you sure this is only $800? And they're like, yeah, that's the price. I'm like, oh man, I don't need this, but but I know that this is like an $1,800 guitar at the time. You know, now they're probably a lot more than that, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I like that, you know, probably the guitar shops I go to most are Denmark Street. And of course, you know, if you can find even like, I don't know, an effects pedal for less than 500 quid on Denmark Street, then you're doing well. So it's, you sort of have the opposite. You go in and see stuff, you go, oh, this is fantastic. How much is this? £12,000. Okay.
Okay.
I'll see you later.
Yeah. You know what? It's been great. It's been great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, speaking, oh, we didn't even get into one of the, well, I guess that's why we have more content coming. Well, I was going to say.
The Patreon coming up, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I got to play a $1.2 million guitar, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was weird.
I want to hear all about that. We should go and talk about that more, because we have come to the end of this episode. So we're going to pop over to the Patreon, dear listener, patreon.com/guitar nerds. And Blake and I are going to talk all about this £1.2 million guitar. If we get time, I kind of want to ask you about the new Meris LVX, because you played that as well. And I want to talk about that, because that's like a thing I'm really interested in, but they're very hard to get a hold of over here at the moment. And I couldn't get one, you know, to a demo unit, quite not YouTube-y enough to be in the first tier of stuff that gets sent out. But yeah, so I want to hear about that. Anyway, dear listener, you can join us over on patreon.com/guitar nerds. And for as little as $1 a month, you can support me and the podcast. And for that, you'll get this episode ad-free and early. This episode is late, because I'm useless, but and also because Matt apparently can't use a calendar. $5 a month gets you access to all of that, plus you get the Patreon special episodes, the special Patreon episodes. $10 a month gets you all of those things, and I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favorite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. I know Facebook is old school now, but it's still actually quite a good place for us to just chat, so come and have a chat. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Well, we've been the Blake and Joe Show. Farewell.
Yeah. Bye.
See you. Yeah.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.